They don't.
Blog Talk Radio.
Recording in progress.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. Another Saturday, another day behind the blue curtain. I'm Stan Mason. I got Four House in there. Big John, the big brother, made it in here. John is tired today. He had a long night, but he's still up in the house. And we're gonna talk about a topic today. And we're fortunate to always have on our crew. We got a chief here, so we always know who the boss is. So we got a chief here, and one of his topics, emotional intelligence. And I know y'all hear us talk about it on the show, and you want to know, well, what exactly is it? And everybody wants to say it's a police term, and it applies to police. But I think we're going to go a little further with that today. We're going to get into a deeper philosophy of emotional intelligence and its applications, but we're going to go around the horn and say good morning. I'm not calling nobody off in order. Y'all speak up. Who wants to say good morning first?
Yeah, it is. Well, thank you. That shows some emotional intelligence, doesn't it? Good morning from Chicago. I'm good. Let's go.
All right. Big John, I know you're just waking up, brother. Good morning.
Yes, I find it interesting that you guys chose a topic that Joe lacks intelligence and emotion. So this is going to be an interesting show here. So, Joe, you don't know? Usually it's empty with the coffee you made this morning. I'm ready. Let's go.
Oh, you're going to get ready. You're going to get tuned up, son. Don't worry about it.
All right, Mr. Espresso. I mean, we are all drinking Maxwell House, and you up there with your pinky out doing the espresso. What's up, Ed?
Not much. Happy to be here. Good topic. Ready to get started.
All right. How was your week, man? How's the crime report going?
It's doing well. Anybody who's listening or watching, please follow us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and subscribe to our newsletter, please.
Because the crime report actually goes in much deeper and better than this show does. They actually get into and dig into and spend weeks, if not months, digging into stories. So if you really want to know what the real deal is behind a lot of stuff, you know, follow Isidore and the crime report and click on it and check it out. And we're in the works of getting a link on the Facebook, on my webpage, so that we can get you guys right there because, you know, you guys see Izzy. He brings a wealth of knowledge in here every week. And we're going to go up to say good morning to the man of the day, Big Chief. What's going on, Chief?
Good morning. Good morning. Back. I've got pushed back outside, so I'm actually the weather is at least nice enough that I can sit outside while everybody's doing their things inside the house, and I'm not in their way. Great to be here. Again, this is a topic that I don't know how many times that I've spoken about this. Not for, I know we've done at least one show on it, but almost in every episode we do, somehow, some way, this topic creeps up into it. And then I think it's one of the foundations of one of the most important foundations, and specifically law enforcement. I'll preface that. But this is an everybody topic. This is not akin just to cops. I think it would help a lot in many of the things we see. And I think as we break this down and kind of get into it throughout the day or throughout the show today, I think people will understand that if there were a certain level of emotional intelligence on almost every stinking video you see that's played nationally, they wouldn't have occurred. We wouldn't have been watching those videos. We'll stop it there. But good morning. Happy to be here. Glad to see you guys. Glad to be back another week. Glad to have it's fading out, but that's my cup of coffee.
You know, speaking of emotional intelligence or the lack thereof, before we get to that topic, we'd be remiss if we didn't discuss probably the most emotionally detached individual in the world right now and what's going on in Ukraine. And I know people have heard about it all week and all that, but, you know, we're actually witnessing genocide, more or less, and a total 100% dictatorship a Hitler-like environment. We're seeing it. What we read, grew up reading in history books, we're seeing it. And, you know, just my feeling is Vladimir Putin is arrogant. He's egotistical. I don't ever see him saying I'm sorry, nor do I see him saying I was wrong. So for some of the people who say, well, that's in Europe, why are we concerned? You better be concerned. And before we get to the chief, we're going to open that one up for real quick and everybody go around. Am I wrong? But does Vladimir Putin not look like a posse? That dude straight up looks like a posse when you look at him. I had to put that on my Facebook because it just hit me. I looked at him, and when I saw him, I just thought of like something on the fence by your garbage can or running across the highway like real slow in front of you trying to make you wreck your truck, you know. But what do y'all think about Ukraine?
This guy?
Let me kick that off. I said this, and I'll continue to say it. You know, the past is prologue. If we look at, you know, the instigations in the war, provocation to World War II, the guy's almost following the playbook page by page, from setting up incursions, from setting up the so-called invasions, the proxies, puppet states, almost verbatim. That's the scary part. But the other part for me that's terrifying is the fact that this guy injected the word nuclear in some of his other offerings. You know, and if we look at the past from the lens of the people who it's affecting, it isn't genocide. Because he's almost saying, he's echoing Hitler almost to the T. He's talking about people, you know, ethnic cleansing. He's talking about getting rid of a certain group because they don't like him. Come on. I mean, unless I'm wrong, unless I'm reading it wrong or listening to it wrong.
Well, that's the part that disturbs me, is hearing people describing it, and they say, well, they're killing white people and Christians and, you know, and so many words, like as if the people that migrated there are less, lives are less disturbing, very disturbing. And it shows how sick of a world that we live in. Like, you know, we sit here and we talk about Black Lives Matter. It's like all lives do matter. And for the people that are Arab and other cultures that are there, you know, my prayers are with you guys.
You know, John, to your point, though, now, you know, and I support Ukraine, of course, against Russia, you know, but I got to say that we're hearing these reports that, let's just say people of color have been turned away at the border, or they're not getting welcomed with open arms. Now, these are students and workers or whatever that were in Ukraine, and I find it in the midst of all the let's give and our love and support and all the money America's sending and all the supplies that the world is sending and all the sentiment, which is well-deserved, well-earned. Still, even in this moment of all lives matter, as you said, John, some lives seem to still matter more than others. And we're seeing some people, and it's not everywhere, but one is enough. One is enough that you turned away because you don't look like everybody else coming across. And we wonder why we have people like Vladimir Putin and how these people flourish. So good point, John. Izzy, Chief, before we go in, y'all want to? Come on, Izzy. I see the wheels turning.
Excuse the background noise. Living in New York, of course, Saturday is the perfect day to do construction. I don't know. As always, I think it's a very complex situation. I think, like Joe said, we have to look at history. And I think one of the narratives we've been ignoring on the Ukraine situation is that, Putin is definitely a sociopath to a certain degree and definitely a dictator. But to say that this happened out of the blue and that no one saw this coming is not a realistic notion. It ignores the facts of the past. We've had many opportunities to back out of this situation, to avoid this situation. There have been advisors in every administration that have warned about the aggressive expansion of NATO, the aggressive expansion of these countries towards him, and have warned that we've been poking a bear, and this is going to come back and bite us in the ass. And every administration has tended to kind of ignore those advisors. But if you want to see how we got here, like Joe said, in terms of World War II, look at the geopolitical relationships between Russia and the rest of the world after World War II up until now, and you'll see a lot of the things that got us to this point. And like John said, it also brings up another great point. Look how quickly the world rallies around a suppressed people that are blonde-haired and blue-eyed and white and opens it up to all of them. Look how quickly the narrative shifts to supporting these rebels and calling them heroes and praising them for these tactics that, you know, last year, months ago, anytime some footage comes in from Israel and Palestine, we don't really have that same conversation. We got people on Twitter and Instagram and stuff. There are photos going around of all these Ukrainians building Molotov cocktails and stuff. And we're like, oh, look at these badass Ukrainians. These guys are tough. But if you put those Molotov cocktails in someone with brown skin, it changes a little bit. It's a little weird. All of a sudden, these guys aren't heroes. These guys aren't you know, rebels. These guys are, you know, terrorists and whatever have you. And I think that's one of the things, like John said, that's come to light recently, is how we respond to warfare and to this type of stuff happening in certain nations. I mean, there were all those newscasters who were going around saying it was so astonishing that this was happening in a European country, and calling other countries, this isn't a third world developing nation, as if we should expect this type of violence in those places. Meanwhile, Ukraine, in terms of economy and stuff like that, is below a lot of the countries that we label third world. So it's just, it's complex. It exposes a lot of things, but it didn't happen in a bubble. It wasn't a surprise. And like always, it's nice to think that people are going in there just to help, but you've got to wonder, you know, who's benefiting and who profits from the situation.
There it is. All right, Chief. You can either weigh in on Ukraine, or you can go right into telling us, explaining us what emotional intelligence is, why it's important, why we need to be concerned. And you know, I got a video waiting for you in the wings.
Yeah, I do. I'll weigh. I mean, I don't have much more to say other than what has already been said, because I've seen all of that as well. But again, I agree with Izzy. This did not occur in a bubble. I mean, if you recall, it wasn't too long ago that they already invaded a portion of the Ukraine. So for me, it wasn't, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening, because, you know, there was a prelude to it, and we knew it was going to come. And I think that we could have had a more significant impact on some of this, but that I'll leave that as it is. So let's talk about emotional intelligence and what you need to know, especially Joe. No, I'm just kidding. Joe's got a high level of emotional intelligence, and I'm gonna say this. I am not an expert. I am not a doctor. I don't have a PhD. I'm not Mr. Emotional Intelligence, you know, certified or anything along those lines. I just have done some research and applied some of these theories in my own little bubble, right, within the things in my span of control. And this really started way, way back early on in my career. I've said on this program, on this show, you know, in the world, in the context of law enforcement, how is it, or how, or why was it that we could have officers show up on very highly emotionally charged calls? You name the call, the tempers are flaring, you know, whatever. But that officer can come walking in, or those two officers can come walking in and do what needs to get done, and we don't have a video on YouTube or TikTok or Twitter, make an arrest, not make an arrest, solve a problem, whatever the case may be, and they do it with you know, the savvy of the experienced police officer. But we also have many officers and agencies that that one officer, and if you're an officer, you know, that shows up could turn a church function into a riot. That's how bad some of them can get. So I started to think, what is the difference between twos? And this started as I began to move into the management portion of my career, and was promoted up through, beginning to get promoted up through the ranks to where I'm at today. And so I stumbled on this thing called emotional intelligence, and it was a book. It was the first book that I ever, I've read on this particular topic, and why some people can function at higher levels than other folks do. The first information I got was for like the business related world, right? So this was in the context of, you know, we're making widgets and we're looking for profit, and these companies of why are their people so great? Why do they stick with those companies? How come they hang out? You know, is it all just pay? What is making these companies retain and recruit great individuals to their business? And I know we can't run law enforcement like a business. There are some aspects that apply. There are many that do not. But when we start talking about recruiting and retention, that is a humongous major issue today. Finding good quality applicants to come work for these law enforcement agencies becomes an issue. So that's kind of where this whole thing began, is to my seeking to find out what it is that sets some of these companies or these organizations apart from other ones. And so there are a lot of things that I came up with, but this emotional intelligence, EQ or EI is what they call it, kind of stuck out, and it really resonated with me as I began to go through and try to figure out how could this be applied to law enforcement. Now, this is, again, I'm in my bubble, right? My own little world. There are other people that are doing this. There are many organizations, specifically in law enforcement, that are talking about emotional intelligence. This week, here in Texas, through the Texas Police Chiefs Association, we have a program that we push out information, you know, four or five little PowerPoint slides called Vincible. Not invincible, but Vincible, meaning that we are not invincible. And it's things like wear your vest, wear your seatbelt, slow down, 540 degrees coverage, something like that. And so I got into looking at the programs because they changed the platform. They used to email them to us. But last week they sent one out, and it was emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence push-out training session for all of our officers. And so I've gone and I've seen research done by IACP. I've seen articles in Police Chief Magazine specifically dealing with emotional intelligence and some of the aspects and the things that we've got. So I started to kind of put pieces together throughout the last couple of years thinking, okay, well, that's what this is. Why is it that we can have that senior person show up? It's not just experience, but that's a big part of it. But they got their emotions in check. They have the ability to walk into a scene and manage not only their own emotions, but the emotions of everybody else in there. How do you get to that point? What is it that makes that different? So I went and I started to do some of this research. And the bottom line is emotional intelligence is the ability to manage your own emotions as well as emotions of others. That's the down and dirty version of what emotional intelligence is. It's got some skills, emotional awareness, ability to identify and name your own emotions, right, ability to harness those emotions, apply them past like thinking and problem solving, and the ability to manage emotions, which includes both regulating one's own emotions when necessary and helping others to do the same. So I know that was quite a bit of information, but what does that sound like? It's one of the biggest buzzwords circulating around law enforcement today. De-escalation. Mm-hmm. Able to check, get your emotions in check, and regulate the emotions of other people. Is that not what de-escalation is?
Absolutely.
Right? Is that not the ability before we have to go use any level of force whatsoever? They didn't say anything about putting your hands on anybody. It was using the 6 inches between your ears to manage a situation. Now, that's great and fine in a great controlled environment world. I will tell you that law enforcement is a very dangerous job. It has the ability to be very dangerous. It has the ability to get people hurt and or killed, right, on both sides of the fence. But, and I'm going to be very conservative, 95% of what we do on a daily basis has to do with any type of force. Would you agree, Joe? Would you agree, Stan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I say 95 is probably a little more than that. But the majority, and again, that's situational because if you're a homicide detective, that's a little different. But if you're a beat patrol officer, right, even in your busiest areas, you're not 100% all the time dealing with armed felons or aggravated offenses. You have them, but you don't deal with them on a daily basis. The majority of stuff that we deal with is, you know, really conversation and calls for service that are important to other people, right? You know, burglary, my house got broken into, right? But there's no need or danger when you go to that particular burglary. So a lot of the things that we do need to have this application of emotional intelligence. And Stan and I talked a little bit earlier today, we saw the auditors came up, you know, First Amendment auditors. And when you look at those videos, you see a complete lack of emotional intelligence, not only loss of emotional intelligence or lack of emotional intelligence, but loss of mental focus, right? Loss of mental capacity, because it's a challenging effect where the person who is within their legal right to film and do the things that they're required or allowed to by the Constitution, they challenge an individual of authority. And then that's when that video starts to go downhill. They start to lose it. Mm-hmm. And we've said, why don't you say, hey, okay, cool. Film away. If you need anything, Holly. I'll get you some water if you need something like that. Move on down the road. Then you won't be the subject on this. So there's a lot to say, and there's still more to come, because I'm going to talk about in the confines of an organization how you can begin to try to push some of this towards, you know, top down, bottom up, for emotional intelligence and keeping people in track. I'm even starting to find some research, and I know last week's show, you know, dealt again with officer suicides, but there's some research that I've been looking at out of Ontario. I think it's Police College in Ontario that relates back to emotional intelligence when we start talking about suicide and stress management and things of that nature. So I believe that's a humongous component of the wellness type program that we need to impart in these organizations. But, you know, again, this is a two-way street. I'm going to talk about from the perspective of law enforcement. I know Stan was going to move towards outside the bubble of law enforcement, but I think if we can get people in the beginning that have high emotional intelligence, when we bring them into the organization will become better. But again, this is a long haul situation. We have to keep that stuff in check and manage that throughout the career, because as we know, the career has an effect on people and can change attitudes and mindsets over the long haul. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to unpack, and I know we got 2 hours, but we're going to have plenty of time. So,
you know, Chief,
y'all can chime in. I got more.
Where you're at right now, I want to say, I watch a lot of those First Amendment auditors, a lot. And I would say 70% of them I could care less about, because they go out maybe meaning well, but they provoke the officers, curse the officers for no reason. They're rude, and you're a human being out there. There's only so much you're going to take. That's 70% of them I have seen. There are some that I absolutely like. They're very polite. They're very professional. They take their time. And when we talk emotional intelligence, I look at right now in social media, what's the biggest thing other than a shooting or no-knock warrants and things like that on a low-level basis eat away at police community trust, or when the auditors go out and they're where they should be, they're not bothering anybody, and you hit it where it gets to where I can't lose this war. It's not even a war. Ego comes in, and it drags downhill. And that becomes very important, because I think as a profession, for too many years we have said, and for the most part, all of our departments have remained silent when it's somebody else. We don't want to comment. We're not going to say anything, and so have the police unions. But for these beat officers, the people like me who just worked the streets a whole year, we didn't ride a desk. We didn't want to make decisions. We were happy where we were. Guess what? When somebody in Kenosha, Wisconsin does something crazy, I hear about it in the streets of Waco, Texas. So what happens in the profession impacts all of us to a degree. It does. And it becomes, I think, to officers within the department, extremely frustrating when you're building that bond with your community and these acts are detrimental to your bond, because your citizens are asking you, even though it's not in your city, let's celebrate that we're not having that problem here. We're obviously doing something right. Maybe not everything, but we're doing something right because we're not dealing with that here. But
And you're right. You're right. And I'll tell you most of this has started to change. And you're specifically correct. That's in Wisconsin. That's not in Texas. The conversations really started to change under George Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you remember, and there started a program called 8 Can't Wait,
mm-hmm.
right? 8 Can't Wait was they wanted 8 tenants in law enforcement. There were groups that were sending this out, ban chokeholds, there were 8 tenants that they wanted to put into policy and make sure that their agencies weren't doing. And they were telling citizens, people on social media, you need to send this to your police department and ask them if they're a part of this program. And sure enough, in my community, it's about as far away from Minneapolis as possibly could be. I had multiple citizens contact me and want to know about this 8 Can't Wait. What is my police department doing? What are these things that are on the 8 Can't Wait? What are you doing to address them? That's when a lot of these conversations began to pick up. And again, we're not the best about saying, hey, that's wrong. Right. We don't put ourselves out there, but under George Floyd, a lot of agencies started to, including me, early on, way before that, way before any other agency in this nearby community of mine, my stuff came out because we were already there. We already had that stuff in place. So those conversations began. And again, I'm going to say that's part of emotional intelligence, having the ability to regulate, don't get mad if somebody calls and says, hey, does your department ban chokeholds? And if we didn't at that point in time, the conversation would have been, you know what, our policy allows it. Ours didn't, but our policy allows it. But I don't get all, quote-unquote, butthurt because a citizen asked me a specific question about our policy. Matter of fact, in that conversation, we banned chokehold. And would you like to see the policy? Let me tell you the website you need to go to. How can you publish this out there? And again, that's just a small, that's one personal small little segment of emotional intelligence. I'm not an expert in this. I'm telling you, have I lost my mind a couple times in my career?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Chief, you bring up something real good. You brought up something, and I want to say this. You know this to be true. Joe knows this to be true, and I know it to be true. John and Izzy can suspect it. Izzy, through research, will go, yeah, that's probably true. But we all know every shooting, every riot, every incident where officers are hurt. This is since 93 when I started, and you had video cameras. We sit in roll calls and deconstruct those incidents, learn from them, and we critique and criticize. This was done wrong. This should have been done. That shouldn't have been done. He did good here. She did good there. We've done that for years. We're very good at going into our little cubicle and saying, how can we fix this, which is right. We want to survive, and we want to get better. But I don't think as a profession on to things like you're bringing emotional intelligence to where we've got to do better by saying to the public, let's just come out and be clean. We ain't perfect. We're human beings that make mistakes. Do we get it right all the time? No, we don't. Are we perfect? No. And I think that admitting that is not going to solve the problem. But it's going to say that we need to learn. And you're right. Emotional intelligence is about hiring a better quality of person. What are we seeking? But then when you get what you were seeking, but you don't like the wrapping paper it comes in, or the attachments to come with it, what do you do then? Which we see.
Stan was talking about recreating and what went wrong and what was done correctly. I also worked in the office of mess hall, right? And I get to see some of the guards talk about what happened in one unit and the next. And the one thing that I realize is that it's easy to recreate something, but when you're in that situation, right, it's a whole different ballgame about what someone did right, someone did wrong, because now your adrenaline is flowing. Your emotions are involved. So it's easy to recreate something, but when you, like, in a situation like that, Jim, Stan, anyone, it's a different ball game. How do you keep that adrenaline from flowing? You got somebody who's pumped up, ready to go, and you, and in our terminology, we say sometimes you got to think for the man who's not thinking for himself, which kind of coincides with you saying manage someone's emotions as well as your own. We use the term think for the next man because he may not be thinking for himself. He may just be thinking, oh, my balls are bigger than Stan's, excuse my expression. But how all this comes into play when your adrenaline is flowing and all this?
Well, go ahead, John.
It's interesting because the whole idea of this EQ, there was another guy who wrote another book, and Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And Kobe actually says, first to be understood, first to understand, then be understood. I mean, which is really what we're talking about here. Because if you first seek that understanding, you know, you put them first as opposed to you first. You see the nexus of where we should be. I think the real problem here is the education of the police, or lack thereof. You know, that we talk about training and talking about issues, but do we push education to the level of understanding? You know, what is, you know, again, we'll talk about the EQ of emotional understanding. Where are these people at? I mean,
yeah, that's
surprised. You'd be surprised what you hear some of these recruits say in the academy. All of us, I mean, all of us that have talked, some stuff that comes out their mouths, maybe you should be fired.
and you think about when, if you go and you look at the research into emotional intelligence, it's relatively new. I mean, it's been there. We know that it's there. We just didn't call it emotional intelligence until the 90s.
Right.
So this topic that we're discussing is relatively new. I put myself into a class for emotional intelligence, right? Because I find this topic extremely interesting. And I needed that information. I wanted more of it. But in my job, there isn't one. There's not an emotional intelligence course to put people through. I think that's changing. I honestly believe that this is going to start coming out. And it has been. It's been, again, like I've seen plenty of articles in magazines for law enforcement talking about the critical need for emotional intelligence in organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still very new. It's still pretty new to our profession. It's been around in the business world for a long time.
Let me ask you this, because it's new coming into law enforcement, and law enforcement has a bad habit of everything that's new goes to administration first if it benefits them. If we want to do it and it's really not going to do anything, we'll give it to patrol. So when we talk about implementation or the concept of emotional intelligence within the profession of policing, let's go down to the men and women who make, and I think we can all agree, the men and women who make the reputation of every police department. It's not the chief, it's not the administrator, it's the men and women out there doing the heavy lifting on the street. And then when we get there, let's subdivide for a minute and say, what about, and I'm partial to midnights because that's what I work. The men and women who work midnight shifts are the ones who never have the resources, never have the business from administration or city people, and they're dealing with the majority of your violent crimes. So even within the department, when we talk about the concept, principle, application of emotional intelligence, how much consideration within a department, we're just talking just cops here, when cops sit in a room, are the detectives willing to say, yeah, we kind of really don't, I forgot everything patrol has to go through at that scene. Yeah, you're reading my report. It's easy for you to send me what I didn't do right or what I should have done, or you got to go do this, and it's going to interrupt your lunch hour. But I'm out there on the street where I don't get a lunch hour. And I'm dealing with it in real time. And guess what I'm dealing with it? At night. When I have no light, no referrals as far as agencies, and you're all these people have. And so I think when we talk about implementing emotional intelligence, when it gets to just us, the police, just me, you, and Joe talking, when it gets to us, we have to be willing to admit as a profession that we subdivide within our own profession. And the chief can mandate it goes department-wide. And for ladies and gentlemen who don't know, y'all think the chief says something and that's the way it goes. That's bullshit. Because every little entity, police departments are made up of kingdoms. And every little entity will structure the chief's order the way they want it to be. And when it gets to patrol, you get what's left. And if I'm lying, if you're a detective, screw up. And I guarantee you, you're going to end up back in patrol as a punishment while they tell us. We're the backbone of the department. Your punishment is you're going to patrol, and your punishment is you're going to patrol on midnight shift. So I love it. I love the concept, just like I love community policing.
When I say training, right, you can implement a program, right? We could bring somebody in and we can talk about it. But the biggest thing about this whole issue is basically the notification or the instruction or the learning of them. Basically, you need to get your emotions in check. Mm-hmm. I personally don't believe there's an 8-hour course and you're automatically, woo-hoo, I'm going to be subject matter Amen. Expert in emotional intelligence. I'm going to be able to go out and handle business the way it needs to be done. There are multiple levels and multiple areas that need to support this emotional intelligence. And as you were talking, I started to think a couple of things. One, my department is my kingdom. There is no other kingdom. But outside of that, when you have people that act out of sorts, right, that lose their cool, that needs to be handled on a disciplinary level and needs to be seen by others, right? The expectations up front need to be set, right? This is what I expect of you, and this is what I expect you to carry out every day. This is how I expect for you to act when people are out and about. So there's a whole another section of this thing. It's the beginning part of emotional intelligence is notifying and teaching people what this stuff is. I mean, again, if somebody would have come up to me 6-7 years ago and said emotional intelligence, I'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. When you break it down and start talking about getting your emotions in check and being able to manage the emotions of others, I think, wow, man, that's a direct correlation to what we do on a daily basis. This is probably pretty important. We need to find out more information about this, Chief. Right? So you go and you start to look more into what the impact this has on people. Now, again, in every organization, it doesn't matter the organization. There are different levels of EQ or EI already in the organization, okay? I'll tell you on this show right now, as much as I have interacted with you guys on Saturdays, right, and phone calls, this group of people has a high level of emotional intelligence. And simply because we have people on this panel or people that may call in and disagree with things that we have to say. And I've yet to see anybody lose their mind on the show. So to me, that tells me right from the beginning, well, except Joe's gotten close, but there's a high level of emotional intelligence in here to say, okay, well, yeah, they disagree, but I still agree. They're not going to change your opinion on whatever the matter is based on the information you have. And we let it go and we move on down the road. But we're cordial. We're professional about it. We don't lose our cool on it, right? And again, if you can do that in the context of this job on most instances, then you will be a much more successful department and or organization as you move forward. I'm not talking about shootings. I'm not talking about confronting an armed robbery suspect. You know, that's something that's completely different. But I'm talking about the majority of the day-to-day operations of a law enforcement organization, right? And Stan, you worked in a bigger department than what I am. I came from a larger department down here, larger than where I'm at now. But the majority of the day, you know, and again, it's going to be different. So I'm not going to talk about, you know, different places. Joe may have a different stance on this, but what was your interaction day to day, understand.
And to your point, the community needs to understand it, and I can't blame the community. I got to blame us, the profession, because we only talk to the community when we're spitting out statistics and facts. That's the only time we really interact from a problem-solving perspective. And when you make the statement and you say 75 to 80% of our stuff is not violent crimes and all that, depending on where, you know, where you're at, but for the most part, you're correct. Because when I get out of that car and I'm going into the store just to say hi to the clerk that works the midnight shift, or just because I need to stretch my legs, or I want to get a Coke, I am still in that uniform. And to anybody pulling up, they don't know if I'm coming on a call or if I'm coming to visit, or when they walk in that store, is he here for a reason or is he just relaxing? So then we're having contact with people. So when you say that, we, even for officers who may be against, I don't like community policing, I don't like emotional intelligence, they're crazy, they don't know what to, when you put that uniform on and you get out of that car, whether you speak to anybody or whether you don't, you are impacting that community positively or negatively. Do you go out of your way to speak? If someone says good morning, do you just hang up? Or do you stop and say good morning? Do you say, how are you? These little things, and these are things that add to officer safety. That person, you don't know where people are in their life, and they don't know where you are. But so when you make that statement and people will go, well, I watch YouTube and I see all these videos of this and that going on. For the amount of people that we impact without ever even talking to, because we're at a stoplight and the kid is in the backseat waving, do we roll the window down and say, hi, how you doing? Or do we just act like we don't see the kid? We always impact people. And to the officers, do not do it for your department. You do it for your safety first. And because the citizens deserve that respect, and you know what it's going to do? It's going to transfer back to you. It's going to transfer back to your department will benefit. Your city will benefit.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point, because one of the things that I was researching and looking at is an article called Understanding the Benefits of Emotional Intelligence for Officer Growth and Agency Budgets, right? Budgets, it's, I don't know why they've got that in there, but it's by Timothy Turner, it's out of Toronto, Ontario, former supervisory special agent from the FBI. But one of the very last things that he has in this article, and he goes through a lot of emotional intelligence ideas, and the subsets, the categories, the subcategories of each individual emotional intelligence category where they measure it. But at the very end of the article, he writes, he says, today's law enforcement officers must effectively motivate, develop, and communicate with frontline workers and community members by managing relationships and emotional connections to balance the needs of the organization and the community. What is that a definition of?
Yep.
That's community policing.
Community policing, yeah.
So here you have emotional intelligence on an article that says we have to manage this and do exactly what you just said. We have to manage this emotional intelligence in everyday situations that we may not even be called on. Maybe a stop at the local convenience store to use your restroom or get a drink. How do you interact with that public? Do you walk in and just, you know, beeline, don't say anything to anybody? Again, you understand people will have preconceived notions. As soon as you get out of the car wearing that uniform,
absolutely,
they already have a thought. They already have a thought about you, right? And so, when we go back and we look at people that have had or do not like the police, right? Do not like law enforcement. A lot of them maybe because they've had a bad experience with a particular group of officers or an officer or been in trouble for whatever reason. Those are opportunities to change somebody's mind, right? So, you know, I don't know who's in that store, what their thoughts or processes might be when I walk in, but I sure will say hi to them. Hey, how are you? You know, what's going on? And I've always done that as part of my career. Hey, how are you? I'll hold the door for somebody as they come in. I don't know if that changes somebody's mind or thought perception about our job. They may be just individual. They may say, well, that cop was pretty cool. Held the door for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's cool. That's one person that maybe I changed their mind a little.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that statement is very impactful when we talk about the things that we discuss on this show, specifically community policing. Here's a direct correlation of our emotional intelligence and keeping ourselves in check and managing folks that directly correlates to the community and building those relationships, which goes right back to community policing, that tells us how to police our communities.
Amen.
So, you know, you have all this it's pretty well-rounded, and it even goes a little further because there's articles, an article I got, I think Police Chief Magazine, that talks about research in Canada, how this goes into the wellness program. Hang on, I got it right here. Yeah, it's a mental health article from Police Chief out of ICE, the Police Chief Magazine from International Chiefs of Police, but how this emotional intelligence and leadership in emotional intelligence correlates to basically psychological safety and health of an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And it directly goes back to when we start to talk about officer suicides and the mental health aspect of that. You know, again, it's got some information about removing the stigma, which, you know, I definitely agree with. But there was a correlation between the two of, you know, how does your leadership protect you? Are they a shield, right? Do they protect the officers in those regards? Or are they on the other end of the spectrum where they're just letting everything fly, you know, all over the place? So, you know, again, I think it's a very significant topic specifically to our organizations and how we can make some impactful change. But again, I think it begins on day one with expectations and mm-hmm. these are the things that you're going to do. I mean, have people sign off on expectations. This is what I expect of you as the chief of police and how we're going to have people. Now, that sounds great, you know, probably, and it does work in my organization because it's not as big as, you know, NYPD. But when we have people that don't act that way, they have to be held accountable, right? They have to be brought in, which leads into all kinds of other things. If we do have officers, and I'm not going to get off topic, but if you have officers not having their emotions in check, losing their cool on calls for service that don't require that, where's the intervention into that? Why is not somebody going, oh, that's a problem. We need to address that specific problem. Does it become a mental health issue? Does it become just you're a jerk? You know, what is it? Where's the research and the finding into that accountability, right? Because then if we're not doing that, then we're not fixing it or solving the problem.
That's right.
As it relates to that specific issue. So I have huge, huge issues with that when we have those videos or they happen in organizations and we don't address them specifically from the leadership or administrative standpoint and are allowed to take real significant corrective action, right? Because there are different levels there. If you guys think that just because something's brought to me and I say you're fired, then that's it, you're fired. That's not the case
mm-hmm.
because there are other levels of either union or associations that can go to collective bargaining or you know, other measures to get people to their jobs back. But we really need to focus organizationally on this. We need to, and again, I know Joe and I, you know, we've talked about the business model in law enforcement, but I think this is something that can apply when we look at some of these larger entities that have the ability to recruit and retain. Why are they doing that? Now, will it all apply to our job? No, because it's completely different. But I think we can take pieces and parts of that and apply it to our organizations, and we can build these better police departments, at least try to push a lot of this information down. Will we have screw-ups? Yeah. We're human. Am I going to get mad? Yeah. I'm a human. It's an emotion that's in there, but I need to have the ability to recognize that I'm getting mad, understand why I'm getting mad, and then realize what is the consequence going to be of me getting mad and just losing it all out there on the street, on body cam, on in-car cam, or on somebody's cell phone video. It doesn't do anything for me, you know? I was thinking about, we'll take this down to a really small, tiny context, and the officers probably can understand this, but, you know, you get, and this is how silly some of this can be. You get a call for service. Somebody, let's say a lady has a plant stolen off her front porch, and you're the officers go respond to that call, and you show up. And as soon as you get out of the car, you say, hey, ma'am, how are you? And she says, well, hell, I guess this is where my taxpayer money is. You guys are never around, shit gets stolen, blah, 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 on and on and on.
Yep.
How do you respond individually to that?
Yep.
I mean, because when I say that, you know, and Joe is laughing because you want to say, well, let me explain something to you. But you have the ability to get that in check, change that emotion. Because if somebody says that to me, does that make me mad? Yeah. Is it calling me out because I didn't protect your plant from your porch? Yeah. And don't worry about the robberies or the sexual assaults or things that we got to be working, but you got to worry about your plant. But that's what I'm talking about. You have the ability to change that dynamic. You can either lose it on that one. You can be a smart mouth on it. Or you can say, well, ma'am, I'm sorry that you feel that way, but what is it that I can do for you today? Right? Something as simple as that. That's what having emotional intelligence in check looks like. And that's a small little time.
But a lot of times that comes from, and I got to give the credit, I'll say for me, to the community, not to me, being that emotionally smart. Because I worked the criminally challenged part of where I was, and I lived there. So, I mean, I could say things a certain way, because to them, I was Stan who worked at Waco PD. I wasn't Waco PD officer Stan. And that was a connection. I could go on a call, and they could say, well, somebody stole my grandma's air conditioner. Waco PD, y'all don't do nothing. Y'all just stiff-neck, blah, 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 blah. And I go, well, I worked this murder over here last night. Who did that? Why ain't nobody blowing up my phone about that? What about that part? Now, that might have gotten a lot of other officers in trouble, but because I'm invested in that community, they understood that reaction from me. Am I saying it's a proper reaction? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. That's for individuals to decide. But to that demographic, they understood my frustration. It wasn't to dismiss grandmother's air conditioner, but it's to say, I'm also trying to find out who did this over here. And that's why when we talk about emotional intelligence, I mean, the officers, when you get in that community and you check your emotions and you learn that community and you teach them or they learn how to check their emotions and you get to that communication point where someone else will say, well, that was a flashpoint comment. But in that environment, that was totally acceptable because they understood my frustration with the overall picture in their neighborhood. Now, a lot of officers don't get there. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm going to say I had a very similar experience from my former agency, and where I worked, I didn't look like anybody there. But I could, because of my investment, I didn't live there, I lived close by, but because of my investment in the community, I could have conversations that other officers couldn't have with people. And it was it right? No. Was it wrong? I don't know. But I think because of emotional intelligence, it was effective. But it was effective because you got more information. And officers that are good at their jobs can do that, and they know that. Joe can go into areas that he has worked and elicit information because of the emotional intelligence that he displays that then garners respect from the community, and they say, well, you know what? I'm this side of the fence. I'm the bad guy. I shouldn't be talking to anybody. But I know this guy, and I can give him some information, or at least send him in a direction that he needs to go. That's where a lot of this leads, and that's on that lower level, that threshold that we're walking and the beat or working the beat. It gives us that ability to think before we react. Right, it gives us this greater self-awareness of where we are. I've said this in the past. Why is it that officers can walk into a situation or be around folks that don't look like them, a culture that's not anywhere near close to what they're involved in, but can manage and navigate their way through that situation and not come out on the end getting their butt whooped or being on video somewhere? To me, that's emotional intelligence. It gives you the ability to communicate and go into multiple types of situations with people, right, who are not like you, and you can manage to get what needs to get done and move on down the road. So, I mean, again, I think you're right. It allows to have those conversations, which then goes all the way back to community policing.
Community policing. Big time.
Yes. One thing I know for sure is, like, it's from a street level, right? There's officers who work, who can come in our community, right? It could be a big thing. Joe could work a whole other community, but reputations of officers gets around in the street. Oh, man, that's Joe Mosley. Man, he don't really come out that much. You know what I'm saying? But we know who Joe is because he's built up a reputation for the way he handles the community when he was in the streets, right? So it could be a situation about to pop off, and something that you said is key, right? So Joe could come over and say, yo, hold up. Chief, let me go over and talk to Big Johnny, see if I can calm him down. So Joe comes over, and he uses the intelligence of knowing that I want to be heard. Stan may not want to hear shit that I have to say. And all I probably need to do is blow off steam at that time. And you got to have the intelligence to say, okay, John, what's going on? All right, let me go back and talk to the chief. We're going to get this situation, get your guys under control, and I'm going to go talk to the chief. I'm going to talk to the guy. See, now, as you being a chief, here's another thing. You have to find a balance, because you can't chastise your officer or reprimand your officer and embarrass him in front of us. But now here we are, like, yo, this dude is in violation. So you have to have a balance of how do I walk this line and not make my officers look bad, not make myself look bad in front of my officers, and how do I keep the community where they see that I'm for them and I'm going to fix the situation. So there's a lot that goes into this, but I think that experience, Stan could go in a community and de-escalate something that the SWAT team might have to, you know, come out for. He make it go in that situation and say, hold up, man, let me go in there and see if I can talk to these guys. I know these guys.
I agree with that. But, you know, the one thing that people tend to overlook, the nexus to all of the problems in most, and I think in all the departments, and something that Kobe said, the challenge is not to manage time, but to manage ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at all of these issues, they boil down to time. How much time did you spend on that call? How much time did you take arriving to that call? How much time did you use doing what you did? But to manage yourself is really, you know, again, we'll go back to the basis of community policing and all this emotional intelligence. It's managing yourself. But the real nexus, again, goes back to that one little finite piece, time. And until we get that bug.
Yeah, I agree. Time is a major issue, and it is a lot for a lot of places. Well, why aren't we still out here? Why is this not done? How come we haven't finished? Blah, 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 on and on. And we need to change that. You know, we need to change the fact that, I personally have said this for many years, being a SWAT operator in this profession for 27 years now. You know, when we go on these, like a barricaded person, I understand the need of getting it done, right? We need to get that person out. But really, what's the rush? Mm-hmm. Is it financial? Is that what it is? Is it overtime?
Go.
Is it
right there?
What is it? And most of the time, that's what it was. We got come on the clock, blah blah blah. I mean, well, again, we're talking like a barricaded person. We'll say a suicidal barricaded person. Their agencies now, they're not even responding to those. But back in the day, you know, somebody, I'm gonna kill myself. We'd send a SWAT team out, and negotiators, and we'd start talking to them, and you know, some of those took 7-8 hours.
But gee,
I saw administrators get mad.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, all right, well, kind of what's the value of that person's life? Is it close to what the overtime was spent? Is it more? I mean, give me a value, quantify that for me. So Joe has hit it on the head. I absolutely agree. It's about this time. We're in this crunch. We gotta get it done. And there are some things we gotta get done. Yeah, I think we would all agree. This is things that have to happen now.
But Chief,
a lot of the stuff that we do, they don't take that.
And
it doesn't take as much time as we want to.
I agree. But I'm going to go back on the profession, and I'm going to throw us up under the bus for a minute as a profession, not patrol or detectives or the chiefs, because to me, I would venture to say that the vast majority of the calls we work are either repeat calls at residences or repeat calls at problem locations. Because we do not problem solve, we work calls. And when you solve problems, you prevent calls.
So we're so-called driven. I retired 2.5, 3 years ago. Right now, I guarantee you in Waco, Texas, on the day shift, there's calls holding on that screen. So if you train me as an officer with one goal in mind, clear the screen, guess what? It ain't going to happen. It ain't never going to happen. So now what am I? I'm a failure. I'm not doing my job. What is the pressure? Get off the call. We all know at a street level, we all know that when you take your time and problem solve on a call, your beat officers are blowing up your phone. How much longer are you going to be? I got a burglar motor vehicle over here. I caught in your beat or this or that, or the sergeant's breathing down your neck. And then when you get a second or third call there during that week, then everybody in the administration wants to know why you're not fixing the problem. So I think when, and you're absolutely right, it is time. But police, it's not up to the citizens at this point. The police department has got to figure out. First off, guess what? There'll be crime when all of us are dead and gone. We ain't going to wipe out crime. But we can solve problems, which will lessen crime. Policing in America is not solving problems. We are still working calls. We are doing call-driven policing. And that is why time is of the essence. And then we can't come back at the end of the budget year and want more money from the city because look at all the calls we worked. See, if we lessen, if we solve the problems, we naturally would have less calls. But we can't.
I think in a true good solid community policing type program in a city, we'll use that as an example. It doesn't happen overnight, the timing issue. I personally believe as administrator, we have to be responsive to the citizen. We have to get there. I mean, I'm not cool with 25 minutes getting there. But there's other issues on the back end that you need to solve that keep you from having that 25-minute response time, okay? Mm-hmm. But I think if you continue to work with the program, a solid community policing program, those times lessen, right, in response to the citizen. But then those times can increase on the amount of time you spend on the calls because it becomes a problem-solving issue versus work the call, get the paper, move on down the road, right? Because a lot of them can be solved. They are repeats. It may take 3 or 4 times to go to that one particular address to fix it or to attempt to solve it. It may be 20 times. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to say we show up one time and, we're done because that's not the way that this works because there are other people that are involved in these situations, right? So, again, I'll correlate that back to emotional intelligence, having yourself in check and being able to manage other people's emotions to get them to see the light, right, on how to solve the problem for themselves. That becomes paramount. That may take 4, it may take 5, it may take 10 times. But administration needs to understand that that's what's being done. So if I have a question or my supervisors have questions, why are we still on this call? Well, we're out there dealing with this. And that's a perfect world. That's my organization. That's not anywhere else in the world that and it may be somewhere else, but I don't know because I only care about mine. But what were you doing there? I was doing the X, Y, Z. I'm trying to fix this issue the 10th time we've been out there this month. Okay. And that's where it should be left at. Or what are you doing to get this problem solved, right? Again, that's part of leadership. So what's going on? This is what's happening. These are the steps I've done. This is what I'm taking. I'm taking to resolve this issue. Cool. As a boss, how would you love to have that happen to you every single stinking day? This is the issue. This is what I'm doing to resolve it. Okay. Is that not what works? Is that what we want by leadership? Mm-hmm. Going back real quick on the emotional intelligence. So some of the things that emotional intelligence provides, right, and we start talking about, and this can be in context of anybody and or law enforcement, but a big part of it is we're thinking before we're reacting. Right, we know that emotion is creeping up, whether it's anger, whatever. We'll use anger because that usually seems to be what we're all always in is anger mode. But we recognize that emotion is coming, and it allows us to clearly think that impact would have before we actually react and do anything about it. Okay, it gives us a greater self-awareness, and allows us to consider many other factors before we end up before we ever take any action. And then the biggest part of it, which is, again, another, I say buzzword, but it's the truth, is that emotional intelligence provides empathy for others. And again, it goes right back to the de-escalation portions of what we're trying to teach and impart on law enforcement today, is that empathy portion that has a tendency to be lacking. And don't get me wrong. Do I think that this is going to be the silver bullet for law enforcement? No. It's one piece of the puzzle that I think is an important piece for me that I think can help alleviate a lot of this nonsense that we're seeing, right? But again, you got to walk the walk and talk the talk on this issue. This is not, I can't be non-empathetic or self-aware in my organization and run around like a crazy person doing things that, you know, screaming at folks and then expect my people to be the opposite of me. Right? We as leaders need to set the tone for this. But the biggest part, biggest component, I think, is getting the officers to understand these components. And then the next step for me would be, you know, assessment. Well, where are we at? Right? So where are you at on a specific level in the subcategories of emotional intelligence? And then from that perspective, whatever may be low or may be lacking, then you can take the constructive criticism on how to bring those measures up. That's part of the training aspect of it. I did this. So because I was very interested in it, I went to did an assessment with Blue EQ. Proud to say that I have 89% emotional intelligence. I don't know if that's good or bad. I have no idea what that. Yeah, I don't know what that means. But it was very interesting because it broke it down into a bunch of subcategories. You know, and it's like self-regard, self-awareness, self-control, social perception, social effectiveness. And then they're broken down to optimism, self-respect. You know, so there's a lot of little categories. And again, you got to be true when you take the assessment. You can't try to, I mean, you can BS your way through it, sure. But it brought to light a lot of stuff that I think I already knew in some areas that I need to work on. I'm personally very high in a lot of those categories. But there's still some things that I need to work on, you know. And when I read these things and I go through these categories and I go back and I talk about many of the things that we talk about when we talk about self-regard, self-awareness, psychological safety, optimism, self-respect, self-confidence. Those are aspects, subsections of emotional intelligence. When you have high levels of those, I think, and if there's maybe a psychologist on here that could tell me otherwise, but I think when you have high levels of those in our profession, because of the way that we're set up constructed, I think you have a lesser chance to get into that one realm and category where you end up not emotionally capable of dealing with the day in, day out of this job and your life, right? Work-life balance, and you end up into addiction issues, you end up into psychological issues, things of that nature. That's my personal opinion, it's my hypothesis. But I think there's a direct correlation between the two, specifically based on that IACP article. So those are important, which again then goes into the wellness component. So I think emotional intelligence is just as important as going and working out or financial wellness, mm-hmm. right? So to me it's a big deal. What you do with it, the information can be provided. What you do with it after, then it becomes up to you. But as an organization, I'm fortunate because I can push it on you. And if you don't want to hear about it, then you go work somewhere else. But it becomes very important. I mean, there's tons of stuff. Gordon, you guys all know Gordon Graham?
Yes.
Yeah, Gordon Graham does a bunch of training stuff. He does stuff with Lexapol. You know, he's even got information on emotional intelligence in relation to effective de-escalation. You know, so you're starting to see a lot of this stuff come out, you know, into our profession, and I think it makes sense. I think it's valid. I'm not at a point where I can train anybody on this, but I can read, I can interpret, and I can understand. And so I can take that information and I can mash it all up and push it in my place. You know, what other agencies do, that's up to them. I do want to ask Izzy, though, because his the crime reporter, are you seeing any information or are you aware of any EQ or EI stuff that's being pushed or is effective anywhere? I mean,
So I have a lot to say. I've been biding my time. Joe's been bugging me to get on here. I would like to say one thing, though, is I try to keep quiet because I just write about this stuff, and you guys work it and live it. So I defer to you on the experiential level. That being said, no is my short answer to your question. I would say that with certain exceptions, you being included, on a whole throughout policing, it's not being talked about, it's not being taught, it's not being applied. If it's being talked about, it's being talked about in the public to get points, to get the clicks, to get the money, and it's not being taught. If it's being taught, it's being taught in the academy in a class or two, and then once you get out, you're not getting taught it again. Mm-hmm. And once you get out, if it's being applied, it's not being applied effectively, consistently, or continually. We talk about de-escalation trend. On average, de-escalation amounts to about, in a police department, major police department, about 8 hours. 8 hours in a course of a year. And that's an 8 hour singular versus 100 plus on the range continually. Okay? So that's one thing. And another thing, when we have this conversation, we have it, a tendency to have it in bubbles and use a lot of like anecdotes and stuff. So I agree with everything she's saying on a philosophical level, on an aspirational level. But when it comes to an application level, there's certain inherent problems to the industry that we have to acknowledge. The first being in that we're not training in this. And even if we are training in this, how long are we training it for? NYPD has one of the, if not the longest academy of time, it's 6 months. Most departments, it's 6 weeks. Some departments, it's 40 hours. Mm-hmm. And this is for ages ranging from 18 years old up to your 30s. If you're becoming a police officer at 18 to 23, your brain isn't fully developed yet. If you're not getting consistent training on this, it's not going to register and it's not going to stick. So if we don't have the time to teach this stuff effectively, you can throw a course in there mm-hmm. and feel good about it. But is it going to stick? Is it going to have a lasting impact? It's not. It can't. You can't in a 40-hour training program for somebody who has at least a high school education, rarely a college education. You can't be putting this into that on that level. So we need to have a conversation about extending training times and how long do we need to have these people.
Amen.
When you talk about things like John brought up the adrenaline thing, they're not talking about that in academies. They're not talking about it, and they're definitely not talking about how to manage adrenaline. So these officers are coming fresh off the street fresh out of the academy with no experience. They're 19 years old, and they're getting a boost from that first chase that they have to go on to, and no one's talking to them about what it's like beforehand, and nobody's talking to them afterward. There's no, how did that feel? There's no, I know what you're going through. There's none of that. Absolutely not happening. I mean, another thing that we talk about, they're not hiring for it. Like I've talked to people, recruiters, hires, and stuff like that, and they're very exceptional because in general they're not. The exceptional ones are saying, I'm not looking for, how in shape you are or something like that. I'm looking for, are you active in your community, in your community? I don't care if you're from the community that you're policing in. I want to know, what do you do in your community? Are you part of community services? Are you part of gatherings? Do you do barbecues? Do you donate your time to like Big Brother? What are you doing in your community that shows me that you are an involved individual? They're not hiring for that. And they're damn sure not advertising for it. When they sell policing, like the chief said, 80% to 90% is not this, you're not dealing with violence. You're not dealing with dangerous situations. You're dealing with a lot of community service, community-oriented types of policing. But they don't advertise the job like that. What do they advertise the job at the majority of departments? It looks like a video game. It looks like an action movie. So if you're not advertising for this type of emotional intelligence and you're not hiring for this type of emotional intelligence and you're not training it and giving the amount of time allotted for it, it's lip service to a certain degree because it doesn't happen on an impactful level. And when we talk about the type of emotional intelligence, even when we do it in a de-escalation context, which is totally necessary, De-escalation is still a response-based situation. We don't have conversations with officers in academies or in general that involve with the emotional intelligence of understanding the repercussions of the actions that you take. Police officers have the power of life and death in their hands, but they very rarely are having conversations about what that means after the fact. After you make that arrest, do you understand what happens to that person? Do you understand the potential of what could happen to that person? Why do you, like, the people that, that's why we see videos of officers making these flippant arrests for things like Stan said, for someone getting in their face and cursing at them, which, don't get me wrong, is frustrating and rude and probably infuriating as hell. I totally get that, but also protected by the First Amendment. And if you're going to arrest somebody for cursing, which, by the way, was a legal offense in Virginia up until 2020, you could get arrested for telling an officer to go fuck himself, okay? So you can do that, but then where's the emotional intelligence in an officer to understand that if you arrest that person, you know what they're going to go through? Right now, we have an arrest rate in this country that is every three seconds. 3 seconds, there's an arrest. There's 10.8 million arrests a year, and that's on the lowest end we've been since the 80s. Mm-hmm. And when you have that number of arrests happening, they're not all happening for extreme violent reasons that necessitate arrest and prosecution. A lot of it is people getting arrested for small nonviolent offenses and being pushed to the pocket because these officers who have great amount of discretion are not considering the consequences of their actions. And the culture does not make them think about the consequences of their actions. So when we have the conversation of emotional intelligence, it is necessary. It needs to be applied. But we can't have it in a bubble. We have to acknowledge that there's inherent problems to the industry that make pursuing that almost impossible, that make Jim Devlin's job 10 times harder than it needs to be, because the industry is not set up or structured to accommodate that type of forward evolutionary thinking. And it has to be pushed to do it. Very few departments are just like, hey, we're going to do this. Like, all the departments that have made changes in the last 2 years only did it because they were forced to.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'd be, you just said,
if that's how we're approaching the problem, how are we going to reach it?
You just segued.
William,
I'm sorry. No, I want you to come back on the other side of this video. I'm going to play a video, and I want everybody to mute their mic so that this video goes full screen so the people on Facebook can see it full screen and not just in a block. And then when it ends, you guys can all unmute. Because, Izzy, I want you to come back on the back side of this because you really just introduced this. So we're gonna go ahead and play this video.
Some viewers may find the following video disturbing. Viewer discretion is advised.
Bullshit! I'll write a record box citation to every goddamn one of you. Every single one of you. Get your boy on the horn and get him back here. I'll write every single one of you. Every single one of you were caught in for passing on the burn, passing in the middle. Every single one.
My buddy, he's coming.
I know exactly who he is. I'm not playing.
Not the one on the bike, though. Not the guy on the bike. He was
shit.
No, I'm saying that he was asking me who I was on the phone with.
Get his ass back here right now.
How's it going? Can I have your name and batch number, please? May I have your name and batch number?
Get lost.
Get lost? Are you a sergeant? Is that how you're supposed to talk to the citizens?
Sir, go back into your car. I'll be with you in a second.
The witch is breaking on this place soon.
Why do you feel it? You do not have to permit any form of the law. No, it's not. here, and I want to know why you're videotaping our facility, and you have to provide us some form of identification. You just can't come and walk away and come on and just come up with your strings and fly over our lot. I want to know who you are and why you're videotaping these right now.
You probably want to get a supervisor or somebody higher up.
Sure, here's my charger. It's coming out right now.
I'm just telling you.
Sure, no problem. The drone out in front videotaping. All I'm doing is asking for a form of identification so we can identify who he is. He's not confused about stuff. Supposed to be a fresh dog. Not a problem. He can videotape as much as he wants. We don't get actual identification. He can videotape. Not a problem.
What was the problem? Why did you pull me over?
Why did I pull you over? Because we have a lot of problems with broad channel cars in here. I see you guys all split when I come into the lot. The gate's way back for parts. I just want to make sure that
we're in the car.
Okay. No, you're fine.
Okay. So I'm free to go, right?
You're free.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. What should I take?
I'm being detained or I'm free to go?
No, I'm asking you a question, but you can be pulled out of the car and I can search it if you really want. Any way I want. That means I can be put out fine, but I can do it. So you want to do that? You want to play that game a little hard? Or you want to play that
All I'm saying is... Well, I was on my phone, and yes, that's true. I was following developments with a five-year-old little girl sitting on her dad's lap and just got shot in the head by a drive-by shooting. And if some of the people here gave a good goddamn about the victimization of people in this community by crime, I'd take some of their invective more seriously. The greatest racial disparity in the city of Milwaukee is getting shot and killed. Hello. 80% of my homicide victims every year are African American. 80% of our aggravated assault victims are African American. 80% of our shooting victims who survived their shooting are African American. Now, they know all about the last three people that have been killed by the Milwaukee Police Department over the course of the last several years. There's not one of them can name one of the last three homicide victims we've had in this city. Now, there's room for everybody to participate in fixing this police department, and I'm not pretending we're without sin. But this community's at risk, all right. And it's not because men and women in blue risk their lives protecting it. It's at risk because we have large numbers of high-capacity, quality firearms in the hands of remorseless criminals who don't care who they shoot. Now, I'm leaving here to go to that scene. Should I take it personally, okay? We're going up there, and there's a bunch of cops processing a scene of a dead kid. And they're the ones who are going to be out there patrolling and stopping suspects, and they have guns under the front seat. They're the ones that are going to take the risks of their lives and try to clean this thing up, all right? We're responsible for the things we get wrong and we take action. We've arrested cops, we've fired cops, and so on. But the fact is that the people out here, some of them, who have the most dissent, are absolutely MIA when it comes to the true threats facing this community. And it gets a little tiresome. And when you start getting yelled at for reading the updates of the kid that got shot, yeah, you take it personally. Okay? Now, no offense, but I'm going up there now.
Hi, I'm Jared.
Demeanor.
I don't appreciate
your demeanor.
I don't
you're being very demanding with me.
No, I'm asking you. I'm asking you.
Whatever it may be, I mean, you have a business card for professionals. I don't know you. I just met you a minute ago.
I'm very disappointed in the way the two of you are acting.
For that reason, this is a high-speed road. I think we should all get off of the road. It's a little bit dangerous than being
so
out here.
I'm sorry. Thank you for your concern with my safety. Okay. You put together a pitch of what the problem is.
Are you finished yet?
I'm shocked. Shocked and very disappointed. Thank you for your help.
You may think of them.
You may not tell me when to take my child. You may shut the up and not tell me when I may take my kid and her friend. I will be talking to the chief of police,
please.
And I will be speaking to the mayor.
That's number 540.
I've got all your information,
okay.
Sweetheart. You can put a sentence together. That's shameful. What about this isn't going to go near my because I want to know where it's going.
The driver was surprised with her. That's what his daughter.
Not...
His daughter was very nice as well. She asked and I told her.
Guess what? I'm not coming. And you can tell that to everybody. And fine. And I think that the police have all been in my home and in my second home and in the third home in Tennessee.
Now, I played that the way it came out because I wanted to see people, seeing officers losing their patience, seeing the judges lose theirs, and also seeing citizens lose theirs and try to drop the privilege card. And the last two videos, Chief Flynn in Milwaukee, that's to me, and this is Stan, that's how you do a press conference. We want transparency. Guess what? You got it shot straight in the vein. No chasing. And he told those reporters how he felt. Bravo for him. People may not like the way he saw it. My personal opinion, he put his priorities in order and handled business. The second one, the traffic stop at the end, that traffic stop should be played at every police department, at every academy, to remind the veteran officers and to teach the young ones how to deal with these Karens or Kens or Keishas or whatever name you want to put on them that come out like that. And I think we saw emotional intelligence at its worst. And at the end, we got to see it at its best. So if you wanted a picture of it, that's the best I can do on short notice, and floor is open.
Excellent examples of emotional intelligence being played out in this job. And from the operator's perspective as an officer, it's hard. It's sometimes it's very difficult. Izzy said, he just reports on it. You can understand the level of frustration when somebody is in your face, MF, I'm this person, I'm talking to this person, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. All of us officers have had that. And the amount of restraint and the level of professionalism to keep that in check is insurmountable, in my opinion, because I am that guy. I mean, I am that person. So it has taken me many, many, many years to get myself to where it is the level there. And could it possibly break and come out? Sure, it sure can. But those examples are exactly what we're talking about. Having your emotions in check. Imagine you being out there in those officers' positions. How would you react? And I think it's vital what Stan said about that video being shown. You know, you got again. This is the recognition of the emotional intelligence portion of it. How are you going to react? Are you going to act like that officer?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to lose your mind? You know, again, what at the end of the day, what's the mission? Because when somebody is up in your face and they're screaming and yelling at you for whatever the reason is, that anger emotion is going to come out, right? And then you have all these changes, and it doesn't solve the issue. You know, you cannot go around with the Cartman mentality if you're going to respect my authority, right? Because it doesn't work in all instances. It doesn't work. That's earned at some point somewhere, right? You know, the only reason that we exist is simply because the public allows us to. So somewhere down the line, when I walk into a situation, a store, a call for service, and I say, hey, come here, let me talk to you. Somewhere down the line, that person has the respect for that particular level of authority, right? And so then couple that with the emotional intelligence and dealing with that situation. It's what, you know, we hope to happen on every single encounter, to turn out just like that, right? And let people show themselves for the people who they really are, you know? And again, I said it earlier, it's a two-way street. This is not just us in the law enforcement profession. This is everybody. I understand emotions and people get mad, but once you get that emotion recognized, then you need to start to transition on how is this going to affect the outcome on this contact with whoever. I mean, it could be your wife, it could be your significant other, it could be anybody, right? It could be a road rage incident. Somebody shoots you the finger. I think this came up. If someone shoots you the finger, how do you react to that? I mean, just be honest with yourself. You don't have to tell me, but how do you actually react? How do you react with it?
And Chief, it's okay for us to react differently, because that particularly that traffic stop. When I see that traffic stop, this is me, my 25 years, when I see it. You know, most people will say it's a difficult lady, the officers did great, which they did. They really did. But for me, growing up in a different world than those officers probably grew up with, and here's a Karen on steroids. So now I have to deal with what they had to deal with, but that's boiling inside of me too. And, I mean, you know, kudos to them. But I know me well enough to know the words out of my mouth would have been, see, it wouldn't have been ma'am. I probably would have said, hey, lady, look. It would have went to lady.
Yeah, no,
I have to change that.
And with everything, I mean, they did a very good job managing that situation. And you are correct, because you have the person that has that sense of entitlement, and they have a title that comes with that sense of entitlement, mm-hmm. right? I mean, listen, I'm calling the chief. I'm disappointed. Okay, I'm sorry that you're disappointed. But managing that, and there's some things those officers could have sharpened up. But I've seen the full video. There's some things they could sharpen up. Yeah sure. But they did a very good job in dealing with that. And so, you know, again, you gotta think about it in your life. And again, we're talking this traffic stop and anything that you do when somebody is up in your face or it becomes emotionally charged, how do you deal with that particular situation? Because we're talking about in the context of the cops, but this happens every day.
Mm-hmm.
This happens every single stinking day to
men. Yes, sir.
So, you know, again, I think it's important to push out. I do believe it would enhance our job, but, you know, also this is everyday occurrence for everyday people. You know, how are you going to deal with those particular situations when that person is up in your face?
And to the citizens, how are you going to deal with it when you choose to make that decision to get in that officer's face? You know, I mean, I don't want to absolve the citizens from responsibility too. I mean, we're all responsible for our actions. Right or wrong, but, you know, people, when you react to people, they're going to react back. If you write a check, somebody's going to cash it. Whether it's citizen on citizen, citizen police encounter, whatever it is. But I think, I don't want to absolve the citizens. And I keep going back to some of these First Amendment auditors when I say that, because that is some of the most blatant disrespect you'll ever see on a video out there. Not all of them. Because there are some that I follow religiously, and I've spoken to, and I like the way they do their business. But there are some who just go to provoke the officers to get a reaction. That's their sole purpose out there for likes and clicks and views. And that's bullshit. And so I'm not going to absolve the citizens from it, and it's not that you're doing it, Chief, but I want the people listening to this is that emotional intelligence is not a police training thing, and you all do it, you'll be fine. If more of you did it in your personal life, you wouldn't be in the stuff you're in today. You probably wouldn't be.
John put a comment in the chat. I want him to
go ahead, John.
Talk about that.
Yeah, I apologize, but I don't think those videos represent my community. And the patience that was exercised in those videos, we're not privy to.
Mm-hmm.
I think color is a huge part in how we handle. I'm dark-skinned. I'm big. And my voice may be deep. So first thing, officer, why did you pull me over? Oh, calm down, sir. I'm not I'm not hostile. I'm not pumped up. I'm not emotional. I want to know why I pulled you over because I wanted to. I mean, I get every other response other than what I just seen in those videos. I appreciate those videos. The videos are great tools for some, but when it comes to people in my community, we don't get that type of treatment. What I seen in those videos were people who are privileged. Mm-hmm. This, first of all, sir, step back in your car. That's first thing. Secondly, if I remember that video correctly, that lady pulled up because of another vehicle. Yo, this backup is going to be called, because the cop's going to feel threatened that some shit off the trigger off. Excuse my expression. So, that don't represent, and I apologize, Jim.
I felt that it had to be said because I was thinking the same thing because and I've seen those videos and used those videos, and that's why I wanted you to say it, because then that's this whole emotional intelligence part then becomes incumbent back to the law enforcement perspective, right? When we're dealing with communities of color, when we're dealing with people that are not like us, right? To have the understanding, and as you're explaining, you know, another car pulling up. Or you saying, I'm dark skinned, I've got a deep voice, you know. An emotional intelligent person would be like, and I can't remember how you phrased it, or you asked why were you stopped? Well, an emotional intelligent person would say, well, you're stopped because you're speeding. Right? There should be no, calm down, sir, calm down. And the reality of it is I know that they exist, and that happens. It happens every day. But when we get to the emotional intelligence part of it, keeping those that experience, the relationship, right, being part of the community, when all those things come together, the whole big ball comes together, you eliminate a whole lot of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a car pulling up on me on a traffic stop, and I'll tell you right now, for Jim Devlin personally, that lady pulled up, there would be another unit, because that's just a tactical issue. That has nothing to do with who it is. Now, whether that happened there, I don't believe it did, because there are already two officers, but what you say is important. I think that's information that needs to be put out there for the officer perspective, right? That kind of ties back into what we've been talking about today as far as the emotional intelligence. I can't regulate your EQ. I can tell you about it, and I can discuss it, but I can't regulate it. I can only do mine, you know? But I felt like your comment needed to be said, and that needed to be expressed, because that's the truth. That's absolutely 100% the truth.
It's an alley-oop for Izzy, actually. I'm throwing the knee pass because I know Izzy want to dunk it. So I'm going to shut up and let Izzy try to get the slam dunk.
Well, thanks, John. he's 100% right. I think to talk to what Sam was saying about the antagonism that officers face when you talk about, like, people getting in their face and everything like that. And this goes back to the emotional intelligence of understanding the consequences of your actions. We have situations, especially in communities like the ones that John's talking about, which first and foremost, a lot of these situations, we need to have a better emotional intelligence of understanding some of these communities. To some of these communities, the police are very much an occupying force. And some of these people have had 70 encounters with police officers, most of the time for no reason, before they turn like 25. Because of laws and rules that were passed by people who probably can go their entire lives without ever coming in contact with a police officer. So in a lot of cases, there is reason behind that antagonism. That being said, if someone gets in your face and everything, we need to have emotionally intelligent officers that understand the dangers of using the laws, which there are so many ridiculous laws that you can arrest someone for any reason whatsoever in this country. The dangers of using the laws or something like that. Well, I get it. Officers are dealing with a lot. You know, someone gets in your face. But I'm thinking about, remember during the protest, there was that video of one of the riot cops in the line, and that girl was getting right in his face, and then she spits in his face. And the moment she spits in his face, He grabs her, and her ass ends up on the ground and arrested. Okay? Now, even me watching that, as a normal person, I was just like, when she spat in his face, my initial response was very much like, oh, you're fucked. You done did it now. Like, and that's what happens. And the human response, I understand. But we need to have officers that are emotionally intelligent enough to understand that if you do that, we don't know what happened to her. Maybe she got off, but there's a good chance she could have gotten charged with a felony and wound up with prison time and wound up in jail and wound up with the tattoo of that felony on her for the rest of her life for a two-second incident that happened because a cop felt offended because she spit in his face, which debatably is a First Amendment issue. So we have to, like, look past that, and that's why I'm like, it's people are going to get in your face, and they shouldn't, and civilians should have that emotional intelligence, but it's not a 50-50 split in that regard. When you have the power of the entire criminal justice system, and you have the power to fuck someone's life up for decades because they spit in your face, is that fair? Is that just punishment? Is that a quantifiable consequence for what you're doing? And we have to have officers that think that through.
Yeah, but let me you spit in my face, bro. I mean, when I'm writing tickets for assault because somebody spit in somebody's face, if somebody spits in my face out there, I'm telling you, that's not questionable assault. With all the people got stuff Billy Graham, but wait a minute, people got stuff Billy Graham can't pray on.
There's a difference.
You spit in my face.
There's a difference.
I don't know.
There's the difference between spraying and the difference in spitting.
Yeah.
Now, if you're telling me that this is a First Amendment issue, we got problems.
No, I said it.
Hold on. I understand. I think what we're looking at is an issue of, at least in my mind, discretion. Is this person just hyped up? It's like trying to prove murder. There's an intent. Now, if you're telling me you're speaking to me and you're just, you know, you're off, you got your First Amendment going, I understand that. But the hawk spit.
Hold on. Yeah, all right.
Acknowledging the semantics of the situation. I get it. But see, this is my point. You guys are all riled up. Okay, now, you arrest that person. Like, I get it. But all right, you're riled up and you'd be validated. You just issued an arrest. That person, because of that arrest, could, and this has happened before, could potentially face 5 to 10 years in prison.
Easy.
There was a guy in Virginia who had 6 years.
And is he? Right, but you know what? When we're talking about spitting in the face, good for her. I hope you do all five, and I'm going to tell you why I say that. I don't know you, and I don't want AIDS. I don't want hepatitis. I don't want all that crap. No. I don't want to hear after we've done the test that nothing's been proven. That's bullshit. You know what? You walk up, and like Joe said, if we're having a conversation and spit comes in my face, that's one thing. But you do that, oh, you're going to get arrested. I'm not going to say I'm a beat your ass or whatever, but you're going to get, and I'm going to send you a calendar every month for 5 years so you know how long you're there.
Hold on. Then let me ask you a question. How does that behavior and response solve the problems that we're talking about? Or does it just contribute to them?
So are you saying officers should be, citizens should be able to go up and just hawk spit on an officer who doesn't know him? No. Let me finish.
That's not what I'm saying. But are you saying that because you spit in someone's face, you should get 6 years in jail?
Let me answer that now.
Here, there's two schools of thought. I can do you one of two favors. First of all, I have to lock you up. There's no question. Let's just talk about that. Now, the question becomes, what do I charge you with? Do I charge you with a felony or misdemeanor? I can either go for an ag bat or 10 murder because you might have some disease, or do I say, you know, maybe this guy was so fucked up that maybe they made a mistake, and let's charge him with a misdemeanor of a simple battery.
Can we just take this moment, what you just described? First of all, just the fact that someone can have those two options just in their pocket is probably a little bit dangerous, especially when, like we were talking about, most officers don't have your emotional intelligence, Joe Smosley, don't have your emotional intelligence, Stan, don't have yours, Jim. We're talking some guy who's fresh out of the street that can do this to anybody with abandon, without consequence.
Couldn't that fall back on the desk sergeant to the charge fit the crime?
Falls back on the detectives.
Now, let me say this, Izzy. I've seen a situation like that where a gay guy spit in his correctional guard's mouth. He caught him while he was talking and he spit in his mouth. That guard had to drink those cocktails for a few days. How do you address that? Now, you done disrupted this cop's whole life because now this cop has to drink cocktails and constantly get tested.
I mean, number one, ignoring the fairly heavy underlying homophobia to that response.
No, but this guy was gay. Because
once again, like I just like to say, you can't get AIDS from sex, but that's a whole other thing. I understand the point that you're making. I'm saying, like, we have to quantify this. And I'm saying my question is does that discretion lend itself to the problems that we're talking about? How does it solve the problems that we're talking about? How does the ability to arrest someone because you got pissed off they spit in your face and send them to prison, does that solve the problem of the prison pipeline, or does it contribute to it?
I get what Izzy's saying, but I also want to say for every action there's a reaction.
I know, I understand
place.
That.
Quantifiable reaction.
I don't decide that.
I don't, right? And again,
it kind of can be decided by officers.
Yeah, but I think willful intentional. I mean, you can't just let that go. I mean, in the same context, I mean, coming up and punching somebody.
I'm not saying you can't let that go. I'm saying that the common response and the discretion is there's a fairly dangerous precedent on when it
goes.
The norm is that these people wind up in jail.
Okay, that's the law enforcement norm is, but I can tell you this. I don't care if you're in Waco, Texas, Atlanta, Georgia, New York, Chicago, Stanford, wherever the hell you are. You walk down the street and you hawk spit in somebody's face, your ass will be in traction, ICU, if not in a graveyard. And now, when we consider, we're talking about cops' emotional intelligence versus citizen emotional intelligence. And I'm going to tell you, let's just put the badges and all that away and be citizens. Man up. You come down the street and spit in my face, one of us or both of us are probably going to the hospital. And that's not Stan's opinion. That's a lot of men out there. And how would be it? I don't know about your block. So let's remove the police and they can put you in jail for 5 years. There are people out here who will shoot
you. We're policing podcasts. Why are you removing the police?
No, because today we're talking about emotional, and I said at the top, I'm talking about emotional intelligence for citizens, too, because it does the cops no good to become emotionally intelligent
Listen, I'm not arguing. I agree with what you're saying. My point is that of the two, the larger thing that's happening is that people are ending up in prison for petty shit like that. People are being assaulted and beat up by cops and everything like that. Okay, so just so we're clear,
there are people
running around and victimizing cops with spittle rampantly.
I think it's somewhat dependent on where you're at, because that's assault. Texas, that's assault.
That's right.
I mean, and it's equal to me as slapping you. That's the same thing in the state. So, you know, there's a specific offense for that particular item. Now, if I go get tested, because I have had this happen in the past and people were arrested for assault on a public servant, and kind of what John was talking about, we got to send them to the health department. Now they got to get blood drawn. They got to make sure they don't have hepatitis.
Take some big old pills.
So there's some further stuff beyond that. I get what you're trying to say. But I don't necessarily, and I'm just going to say is that spitting on somebody is not a minor offense. Spitting on somebody is akin to the same thing, me hitting it, in my opinion. Going to prison for a dime bag of weed, I can get behind. You can't, or I can't get behind. I should phrase that. I can get behind that being petty offense in the prison, you know, pipeline system on a petty offense. That's a petty offense, in my opinion, in my estimation. I don't think any person, any human, should have to take anything like that. That's my deal. I understand the concept of what you're trying to say, Izzy. In Texas, that's kind of a bigger deal. I think that's a lot across the board.
And I
understand what you're trying to say.
I'll even agree with Izzy to say I believe that he's right in that I believe that people have taken ass whippings and prison sentences for passive resistance. Not assault, passive resistance. And they have received prison sentences for it and been treated bad. But spitting on me, ain't nothing passive about that. Especially if I hear you hawking, you're preparing. You're loading up, you know.
I get you and Jim both hit the, that's anybody in the streets know this. There's two things you don't do. You don't slap nobody.
And you don't spit on nobody.
You're supposed to kill them, and you're not supposed to spit on them.
Oh, amen.
If you spit on somebody, that's, my cousin lost his life because he beat up a dude, and the dude said in court straight out, it wasn't because I got beat up. He spit on me while I was on the ground.
Yep.
It was his spitting. If you spit on another man, that is about as low as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a street level.
There's a lot of respect to a guy.
Right,
but I'm beginning to realize that the spit example is kind of a classic.
Yeah.
I'm beginning to realize.
Now, Izzy, you actually subliminally, you tapped into, you could call me anything you wanted to call me. You could probably walk up and do the shoulder bump when I was at work. None of that stuff would ever have bothered me. My biggest fear on the street was if you come up and hawk spit on me, and you tapped it. It never happened, thank God. But you tapped into that one lane, that one. Every officer has that button, and that was the one with me.
So if I don't talk, it's okay.
Oh no.
If I just collect a whisker in my mouth.
No, I can see your cheeks moving, baby.
I'm just
you're the most intelligent.
There's consequences for certain actions. That's just the way it is, and there's something that can be
that.
Done.
Exactly.
I agree with that. Now, overt,
you know, was the people who tend to experience consequences aren't the police.
Yeah, well, I mean, and
good point.
I think
good point.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think the spitting example is, you know, when we talk about that emotional intelligence, well, you put yourself in that officer's shoes. And I don't know what video you're talking about, or at least I don't think I've seen it.
No,
I don't know the officer.
I did, but again, I should find the spitting was a bad example.
No. I want to use that. I know the officer grabbed that first one. I threw him down on the ground. Right. So, and I think most people, anybody that would had that experience would have probably done that and some, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the emotional intelligence is, you know, was it overt? Like, was it over above and beyond what he did to the female that spit on him when he grabbed her? Or he just take her?
No, oh, it was about what I would do if someone spit in my face. But my point was that after that happens, after that initial response, does
right.
it or not, is that the discretion kind of goes out the window for how much we're going to apply the law to this person. And
right.
depending on what how did he grab it? There's no conversations that happen after this. Usually a person gets arrested and then they wind up with whatever sentence or penalty or whatever they're going to have happen. It's just going to go through. Depending on what it is. My point is that discretion kind of lends itself usually to circumstances where a person is exposed to the full weight of a law, of the law, which I'm sorry, nowadays isn't really balanced.
Well,
and they wind up.
My question then is this.
there, you would admit that there is some discretion. Let's start with that one. Would you say there is some discretion?
Yes.
Let's assume. All right. So then it becomes incumbent on whatever system of justice we have to either make the case for or against that charge. Would that also be correct?
Yeah, we're heading into some, we're getting this up to something I'd like to point out, so yeah.
Okay.
But Joe, you know, Mike said on the Facebook, and Mike brought up a good point. I think really was at the root of how I think and why, how I said I would react to the spitting. He said, you know, those in public service don't get a rest break. They don't get to take time off. They go from incident to incident to incident to incident to incident and then go home to their wife and their kids. Now, I come home, and if I'm working a questionable death and my uniform smells like one-month-old dead person, I take my uniform off in the garage because I don't want to track that stuff in my house. So, you know, we're in that lovely conversation because we're talking about emotions, and at the end of the day, we're all human. Am I saying the cops should shoot them? And, you know, if I charge the person with the DA – And the judge does, that's them. But I'm telling you, I think that America has really, as far as police reform for me, we haven't even scratched the surface of meaningful reform. But I think we have gone to the extreme to where we don't want to respond to simple thefts anymore. We tell the store owners, don't worry about it. We don't have the people to go. And I think I don't want to send a message to people that it's okay. And I'm not saying you meant this, Izzy. I'm just using it as an example of how far people take stuff. It's okay to spit on an officer. And I'm going to tell you, before you spit on any police officer, man, woman, black, white, gay, straight, Jew, it doesn't matter. I want you to think twice about everybody you walk by that you didn't dare spit on. Because if you step over a line, if you write a check, folks are going to cash it. And they're going to react. And when you spit on people, and in Texas, we have a charge for it that is a felony. It's not as simple as I just spit. Like we all said, you got to go through the AIDS test. You got to go through all this crap. You got to go through whether the person has, what's it called? Hepatitis. Whatever. You, all of that crap. And like I said, if it's just we're talking and it comes out, that's happened to me. It's just I will give you that go to hell look. I'll do that with the evil eyebrows. But if you hawk and spit on me, first thing I'm going to make sure is that you don't get a second chance. So I'm going to address the area where the threat came from. That's behind that enamel, porcelain, or plastic that you got in your mouth. I'm going to make sure that is shut. And then we'll deal with that from there.
I just think as we're going through this, so being in Texas, I remember having a guy spit.
Oh, we're at 2 minutes. Wow.
In a conversation.
Wow, we're at 2 minutes.
He was talking.
I agree with everything you're saying, and because this is the internet, I'd like to specify I am not condoning spitting on police officers. I do not back that behavior. Okay.
If somebody spits on you, call me. If they spit on you up in New York, call me. And I'll call John.
I'm not advocating spitting. My only point was that, like, and to Joe's point, like, if you get charged, it goes on. Technically, is that 95% of cases are handled in plea bargaining. They never make it before.
Yeah.
And you have people who get sent to get charged for minor, nonviolent, quote-unquote, offenses and stuff like that, that get hit with, that plea out for that, for crimes they didn't commit, for crimes that are out of equatable, that are not equatable, like it's happening all the time. And when you have that force of unregulated, non-accountability justice system that we exist in, there's dangers to it that can result from real human responses.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I understand the response. And it also begs the question of if policing can even reach that level of emotional intelligence to avoid these situations, because these are human people. I mean, debate it or not, like,
spit it out,
spitting or whatever happens, we have it's a question of whether or not they have the emotional intelligence to reach it. My point was that the weapon they have behind them is too often levied to wind people up and serving time and getting categorized as criminals which never leaves them for minor offenses.
Right, but let's not leave it at the officer who was spit on, because that's not who ultimately makes the decision. It's the detectives, the district attorney, and the judge. It is not that officer. I can charge them with aggravated assault, and that district attorney can say simple assault, Class C ticket, and move down the road. That's their thing. But we are trained. You will charge with the highest maximum offense you can, and we can go backwards from that. But we can't go up to that. So, it's not always the officer who was spit on.
When it's the highest maximum offense that you can charge, you can also, there's mad discretion for officers to pick offenses that have higher penalties. You have officers that are doing this conduct because they know for a fact that if they charge this person with this, it'll get...
Right, but I'm not dismissing that, but I don't want to talk about the few that are doing the misconduct. I want to talk about the everyday from the example you gave. If I charge somebody with something, aggravated assault, that district attorney can do whatever they want to do with it, drop it or whatever. That's not staying. They just call me to go to trial, but society will say, oh, the officer charged him with all of this, and the officer didn't. No, the officer didn't. In fact, I can say I'm pissed off about it, but I'm not offended by it to that degree. I'm just going to charge him with a B misdemeanor assault, okay? That district attorney may, or my sergeant or the detectives may come back and go, why didn't you do aggravated assault? Why? Now I'm catching heat from them because I didn't do. So the officer who will be the victim catching it both ways. And I don't think you understand that because I haven't done the job, but the officer can say, I'm going to give this person a break, but I'm going to do a report and write a citation. Then your sergeant saying, why didn't you charge him with this? Then the detective is going, why didn't he charge? He doesn't know what he's doing. What am I supposed to say? I felt sorry for him, so I didn't. I don't get to do that. Either you were assaulted or you weren't. And you make a good point, because this would never have come out. But the officers get blamed a lot for how people are charged. Yes, we can arrest you and put you in there on an offense, and that may not be what you ultimately go to trial for. John, am I wrong?
No, not at all.
Yeah, but you got to be very careful there too on this cutting the break,
mm-hmm.
because I believe has a tendency to come bite you in the ass,
mm-hmm.
because it's charging them with the information you've got.
That's right.
That's what it comes down to. I mean, because you can't take I'm getting off the spitting topic, but you can't take an aggravated assault charge and turn it into a beat.
Right.
I mean, it's either an aggravated assault or it's whatever the other offense is. So you have to be very, very careful in that respect. It is what it is, and whatever the facts present themselves to be, that's what the charge is supposed to be. So, for the officer perspective, and from me being the boss, it will come back and bite you in the ass when you do things like that,
mm-hmm.
because it'll come out in trial, it'll come out in testimony. And the defense attorneys are very good. Well, this is what happened. This is barring the line and bullshit. I see Izzy scowling over there, but that's cool. I'm not talking about made up offense. I'm talking about a legitimate crime that's been concerned. Whatever information it is that you got, that's the offense.
That's what it is.
Charged. That's it.
You said defense attorneys are pretty good. There's a lot of dudes, a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't get to finish because I changed my thought in my rapidly evolving brain. There are defense attorneys that are very good at picking that apart in trial and then creating the reasonable doubt.
Absolutely.
So that's what I meant to say. That's what I meant to say.
I mean, now granted, but again, the majority of cases don't go to trial.
They're fled.
Do not go to trial,
yeah.
Which oftentimes lends itself to a lot of people serving time they shouldn't
right,
be serving.
Right, right. We got to get out.
Which isn't on the officer. They're just part
right.
of the cog.
We got to get out. But in the interest of what you're saying, Izzy, a lot of these people don't have real defense attorneys either. They got court-appointed lawyers who have 50 or 60 other cases. So they're not represented fairly anyway. So, yeah, good point. But with that, we got to get out. Facebook, appreciate everybody joining us today. And then you guys, oh, this is good. Chief, you opened up a whole bunch of, bro, we could go fishing with all this can of worms.
I had nothing to do.
We blaming the chief.
Absolutely zero.
You're the chief.
I mean.
Yeah, John. Come on.
one last word. Izzy, the reason why a lot of times people are overcharged is to do exactly what you say, not go to trial, to plead down and cop out to the whatever charge, the lesser offense.
Yep. So that way we can be
overcharged for that reason.
That way we can feed the for-profit prisons or put them on probation and the counties can rake money in. Anyway.
And my point was that in the academies, in the culture of policing, they don't teach police officers to consider the consequences of everything, of the job. The thing that...
which Izzy becomes... Izzy, you're right. I'll agree.
We've got a lot of well-taught people running around, Matt. It's
I agree with that.
No, what you just said, Izzy, really sums up emotional intelligence. People cannot empathize. And it's funny because every time an officer is arrested or suspected or something or locked up, they get all the empathy and consideration in the world. So you bring up a really good point. With that, we're going to get out. Thanks, everybody, for joining, Chief. Well done.
Don't spit on anybody. Buddy.
Yeah, especially
not here. Sitting on police officers.
Y'all got to excuse this. He's from New York,
But the best spitters come from New York.
Check out the sidewalks. We're getting out. Y'all be good.
Have a good weekend, guys. Later.
All right. Damn, son, that was a good show.